This is the April 23 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Brian Stark. He is with the Andersons in Mansfield, Illinois. We're joined by Kurt Kimmel of AgMarket.net out of Normal, Illinois. And here from Champaign, Illinois is Dave Chatterton at Strategic Farm Marketing. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Thank you to those who have made contributions over the last week to our programming during the spring fund drive. We appreciate that greatly. You still can if you'd like to, 217-244-9455 or online at willgive.org. Our theme music is written, performed, and produced courtesy of Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. Let's get a list of items that we should discuss for the day. We'll start with you, Brian Stark. What's on your list?
I think the biggest thing is we get to the field and see producers focused on planting the strengthening corn and bean basis we've seen over the last couple of weeks. Not unexpected, but I think the producer who's focused in the field also needs to take advantage potentially of some of the strengthening basis that could happen over the next 4 to 6 weeks before he does get finished out of the field.
Kurt Kimmel from AgMarket.net.
Yeah, what do we do now? We're quite a bit off the lows that we've seen. Headline news and, of course, weather and planting progress.
And finally, from Dave Chatterton.
Yeah, Todd, I mean, been kind of an interesting market, a little bit of a sideways pattern here of late, or kind of a choppy market, I guess I should say. I think there's three big factors that we have to look at, you know, going forward. One is the meeting coming up with China. That's still not quite 2 weeks, or a little bit more than 2 weeks away, I should say. We obviously have the situation with the Strait of Hormuz and has a very long tail in terms of what that means for fertilizer, fuel, and perhaps acreage. This fall and next spring. And I think the third thing, of course, is going to be just spring planting weather and where we're at. We've seen what's happened in the wheat market here of late, the drought that's being talked about in places, Kansas, Nebraska, et cetera, too wet in Iowa. And so how things shape up going forward, I think, are going to be our pricing, our board pricing influences here over the next 30 days.
Is your concern, Brian Stark, with the strengthening basis that farmers will misconstrue that as greater demand?
Yes, I think that's kind of what I wanted to point out. I think seasonally you see this happen every year, especially when the end users live in the spot market. Demand is fairly uncovered, but it's not infinite. So I think the producer, while he may be friendly to board prices for whatever reason, and there may be some reasons that Kurt and Dave had mentioned as we discuss more here today for future potential upside, I think the basis upside potential on both corn and beans is strictly due to the lack of movement. And I think there is stocks based on our March report that are higher year over year that we have to take into account for that at some point the calendar starts to work against the producer. So I think it's important that he does focus in on looking and locking and strengthening basis here before he gets done planting.
Before I let you go on this note in planting, and I'll check with the other two as well, you've been traveling back and forth to Logansport, Indiana. What have conditions been like, and how fast or slow do you think producers are moving?
I think we've seen some big progress here over the last week. I think the biggest thing, we were wet in some areas, especially to the north of our draw territory in both the Illinois and Indiana side. Those producers are just now getting started, but most of the central part of our coverage area in west central Indiana have been going for a week. I would say bean planting is probably approaching 40%. Corn is probably 25 to 30%. It's been a wide open week and obviously windy conditions to help dry things out.
And I'll check with each of you. We'll start with you, Kurt Kimmel. What have you been hearing or where have you been and seen? What have you seen?
Yeah, you take central Illinois, Bloomington on east, as Brian said, it's kind of fairly aggressive. Yeah, there's going to be some guys done with beans here if the weather cooperates here in the next few days. They were kind of hesitant to put the corn in, just the forecast, a cold, wet rain, just kind of pull back the reins on that. Northwest, they're going. Got going here this week. Then, of course, you go southwest. They're fairly far along. You take Decatur over to Jacksonville. There's a big pocket in there. I think bean planting progress is much further along than what's being indicated.
And finally, Dave, any estimate from you?
Yeah, I think, you know, to Kurt's point, I think you can, Illinois is kind of a tale of three regions in the South. Let's say south of 70, they're finishing up. In our part of the world, we're, I think, north of 50% on beans and probably getting to be north of 25% on corn, and it's going to go really quickly. You get into that northwest region where it's been wet, they're getting some progress made but struggling. And then you take that conversation a little bit wider, you know, we had the Indiana comment here, but when you look at things, you know, Nebraska is finishing up and had very dry weather, got their crop in very quick, running irrigation at certain points, trying to get, you know, get corn up and get it going. And then Iowa is a struggle. It's been too wet, but they are making some progress. So overall, I think planting pace, you know, it is going to continue to be at or above what we call average or normal pace.
That brings me to the May World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates. USDA can, based on crop progress, change acreage at that point. If we were to continue to plant at a record pace, particularly for soybeans, I think, early on, would that change anything in your mind? And if we were to be able to plant both corn and soybeans at a relatively record pace, how much does that change the acreage in your mind?
I think, while valid points, I think the issues, as Dave mentioned, with the Strait of Hormuz, I think presents enough uncertainty. The USDA may not adjust, even with a fast pace, their acreage projections until we get to June to see how this plays out. We, based on our conversation with our growers across Illinois and Indiana, I don't see much change. Most of the fertilizer inputs, 80 to 85%, were locked in before the war started. You're not going to see a lot of acreage switching, but I think it's in the fringe areas where they don't have as much inputs locked in, where you could see some switching, but there's so much unknown with the flow of fertilizer out of the strait right now. It's too hard to gauge what that impact's going to be here in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I just ran across one guy who was thinking about corn, but $1,200 nitrogen, probably beans, but it's like 40 acres. So I think everyone's fairly well dialed in. But I think it's going to affect more other countries than here in the U.S. And then lastly, too, we all well know it's probably 2027.
And Dave, do you have a comment on that? And of course, USDA coming out this week saying, hey, we didn't get as many responses as we wanted for the March prospective plantings report. We're going to up that number kind of substantially going into the June acreage report.
Yeah, I mean, USDA obviously addressing the survey situation, and hopefully, you know, we'll get the data to be as reliable as we can in a survey like that. But, you know, to Kurt's point, I think corn acres probably overperformed to a small degree versus what we had initially from the USDA. I don't think too many people are changing. Talked to a few clients in North Dakota. I was a little bit surprised that even with the issues up there, and they're one of those areas that doesn't tend to have a lot of pre-booked fertilizer, they're still leaning on corn. They still remember that $1, $1.50, $1.75 under bean basis and the problems that we've had. So even with the China deal brewing, I just don't see those corn acres really coming down. The fertilizer, so, you know, it's available. It's a cost issue. I think, you know, also to Kurt's point, really going to be an interesting unfold. The longer the strait stays closed, the bigger these issues become, particularly for South America. When you look at how much the U.S. imports in terms of fertilizer, let's just call it 15% on average over N, P, and K. When you look at Brazil, that number is closer to 85%. So they're going to go plant a soybean crop here, you know, September, October, November, December, and they're going to need some fertilizer. They've got, you know, the first crop corn that's going in there as well. So, you know, definitely some things to look at going down the road here.
How telling is it for you that North Dakota farmers who are using urea more likely than not rather than anhydrous ammonia, which would be the more expensive of the two products, very expensive in fact, the one that is under pressure mostly from the Strait of Hormuz, that they are considering still switching acres to corn?
Well, I think that tells you that, you know, farmers love to grow corn, and you can look at the margins on paper, but we're creatures of habit, right? And, you know, I guess the point I was trying to make is they remember the sting of not having a market for beans, in some cases no bid for beans, and who wants to go harvest a crop where I have nowhere to go with it? I have no storage and nowhere to go with this crop. So, you know, a lot of that can get worked out. We have the China meeting coming up, or scheduled to come up, I should say, between Trump and President Xi of China in mid-May, and hopefully we get some positive results from that. But I don't think it's a guarantee. And I think right now they see the safer bet is, you know, I'll pay a little bit more for fertilizer, I'll bet on yield and the market, and I'll take my chances.
Yeah, when was it, 2023, we had high prices then. And I don't know if we're much higher than that. You know, farmer, he's tough. He's going to go for it. Then secondly, in order to get farmers to reply back for the surveys, are they going to put a $5 bill in with that?
Maybe. We'll see. I doubt it. It's possible. It is possible, but it seems unlikely. I do have some more follow-up on thoughts related to the Dakotas, particularly North Dakota. Their beans are shipped to China directly. It is the reason they grow soybeans. So how much of an issue is that for a Midwestern corn farmer in parts of Iowa, Illinois, across the Mississippi River, those sorts of things?
I don't think it's as big of an issue. And I think to Dave's point earlier, I think the three I states, your Iowa, Illinois, Indiana grower, when you're in a low price environment, they are the kings of choosing to plant corn to out yield the price problem. And so that's why we've said all along, even with the upside in beans and maybe not as poor a basis, certainly not as poor a basis as some of the northwest part of the corn belts have seen the last few years, I don't see the acreage really shifting in a big way. There's just not enough price differential for the grower today to make those changes here in the three I states.
Can you really outproduce, out yield the price problem?
Great question. I think that's maybe something that you have to really think about from a realistic standpoint, but at least it's ingrained in their head that if I'm going to have a challenge on revenue, what's my base opportunity to produce more bushels, then I'll be able to generate a higher revenue figure than maybe on the soybean side.
One of the things that Darryl Good taught many of us over time was that if you make a decision based on price, that you need to sell that decision, correct? So you have to have that many bushels sold if you decide to plant more acres.
Well, yeah, and it's a challenge right now because of identifying what those future costs are going to be. But if you look at where we're at just in terms of pricing right now, I mean, you know, we're above the spring crop insurance guarantees. We're well above the PLC, you know, price floors. So selling here at, you know, $11.50, $11.70, $11.75 against November beans or, you know, $4.60 or $4.70 against, you know, new crop December corn, can or can't be profitable depending on your operation and how you pencil things out and associate your costs, but it is improving your floor. And I think you know, we have been aggressive sellers of new crop, or maybe I should state that in a way that says we're ahead of where we would normally be. I think at this time of the year, call that 35, maybe 40 and even 45% in some cases for both corn and soybeans, because of all the unknowns that are out here and because of what's happening. And this can, they're very, I guess, polar types of things that could happen. China either buys no U.S. beans and the deal comes apart, or China might buy 25 million metric tons of beans. Who knows? The strait may be closed for the rest of the year. The strait may open tomorrow. All those are very different outcomes. So that uncertainty, I think, warrants, you know, hedging, being aggressive with hedging opportunities when they present themselves.
Dave's absolutely right. I think especially as you change acreage decisions, but I think we would agree that being a little further along the curve is the appropriate strategy. I think at minimum, growers really need to be putting in floors. I think if they're profitable, Dease corn, we didn't have many opportunities to sell or hedge Dease corn close to $5 over the last 12 to 18 months up until a few months ago. I think at minimum, establishing floors to allow upside, if that's really what the grower is worried about, is the appropriate decision against his production.
Yeah, definitely. Even raise your price floor during these rallies. That way you've got a higher floor to work with. Just don't depend on crop insurance. I know that's a tool, but you paid a lot of money for it. I know that's the first thing, but we got to remember the commodity funds are long, and part of their strategy is to be long going into the growing season. So if something would happen, they can turn around and sell it to the public. But if it doesn't work for them, they can turn sellers real quick. It wasn't that long ago we had a crop report and everybody sold, and we were most limited down corn.
What calculus do you suppose that producers, maybe the U.S. government, China, are thinking about as it relates to the blockade of the Strait of Hormuz and China? Because this is where they are looking to bring in oil from, and that traffic's not running. I'm just wondering how you put that into context for the marketplace, particularly for commodities like corn and soybeans.
Well, the transportation flows definitely came to the halt. As far as the U.S. goes, energy here, we're fairly well self-sufficient for the most part, but other countries of the world need that oil. And when you got higher energy prices, as long as crude oil stays firm in through here, I believe that's going to help support corn values. But the American public's going to feel the pain here until we get Captain Jack Sparrow in there to clean that out.
Yeah, I don't know about Captain Jack, Todd, but but we have a situation here where, just as it relates to money flow and markets, we've got a speculative interest, and rightfully so, in the oil complex. And on the long side of that, we have elevated prices with risk premium, war premium built into those prices. I think it's going to be awful tough, just in an overall umbrella viewpoint or portfolio viewpoint, for the grains to really, you know, fall out of bed, even if the fundamentals maybe turn a little bit more bearish here. Let's say planting goes quickly and things, you know, don't go well, China, whatever the case might be. There's going to be that element of support until there is a resolution or some clarity on when the strait will reopen. And right now, you know, as I stated earlier, could be a week, could be a month, could be 12 months. We just really don't know. And there were reports that Iran was laying mines in the strait this week, and that the U.S. is trying to pick those back up. And so lots of moving pieces here, as always, and really hard to do. You know, it puts you in a very awkward or anxious position as a grain marketer and a risk manager, because, you know, geopolitics notoriously tough to trade, and you throw Trump into the mix, and I think it just ramps it up to a whole new level.
Are you telling me that risk premium you're expecting risk premium to stay in the marketplace and until this is settled, and that will hold the market rather than turning it downward based on fundamentals of supply?
I think it provides an element of support. Funds are long in the grain complex, but not to the degree that maybe we have seen in oil. Now, they have pressed up, and they're at some levels here that would make you a little bit nervous, but I think they're willing to hold that, because if oil takes another leg higher, it's hard to envision a situation where grains don't at least see some benefit from that. There's been a detachment here, but it's not 100% detachment, and they're not going in opposite directions.
Yeah, I agree with Dave. I think you, even though the funds have a long position, we have to be cognizant, and I'll just go back and reiterate. That's why it's so important, at least in my opinion, when talking to growers, that we don't become price fixed in this environment, because I do agree if oil does take another leg higher, it'll be very hard for grains not to follow to some extent. And I think most growers are fearful of that. But at the same time, when you look at the fundamental picture, it's not exactly a bullish scenario today. So I think locking in floors is the appropriate strategy, whether that's, you know, financed with a fence of some sort or wide open. But that's the way we approach the risk management piece right now.
On the soybean oil side of this, do the funds which are long soybean oil at this point, do they follow along? Do they buy more in that case? And or does it become a drag on that marketplace?
No, I think they're already loaded up long, and I think that there's this other thing that I may not be quite an expert in, but we do know that in an El Nino year, that tends to be a downward pressure on palm oil production. So that just adds another layer of upside potential for soybean oil, not to mention some of the RVO support that we've seen here over the last couple of months. So I do think that oil could be a leader in the bean complex to help drag beans higher. The meal component is what's going to be the drag on that.
You'll be watching soybean oil through the summer months?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're at a point here. The 70 cent seems to be the magic number of resistance here. We'll see if it's due for a correction here. But even though we've got ample supply, stocks of bean oil at the present time, there's still a lot of optimism. The funds like being long bean oil, short meal on the spread. Crushing plants, man, the crush margins are huge. So they're going to keep crushing until they turn negative.
Let's turn your attention for just a bit to the wheat market. It has been strong. Hard red winter wheat seems to be in actual trouble. It's hard to kill that crop, but it sure looks like it might be really having a tough year.
Yeah, Todd, and when we talk about wheat, of course, specifically, we're talking about western Kansas and the hard red wheat crop. The Kansas City contract is in the lead in that situation, and you know the market rallied strongly today there because of that. But you know, wheat, as you mentioned, you know, maybe 9 lives to wheat, but we might be on about 8.5 here. So there's a little bit of rain in the forecast, and we can improve things to a degree. So a lot of talk in analyst circles about seeing that hard red wheat crop probably dip down, you know, maybe 630, maybe 625 million, maybe as low as 600 million. So you're talking about a 22 to a 25% year-over-year reduction. The The issue is that that makes some headlines, that gets some fund length into the market, but where can it go? And I'm just not convinced that it can go a lot further than where we're at. We're hearing stories today of East Coast millers importing wheat from Poland, 120,000 metric tons, which is not a small amount. We're seeing Russian wheat work its way into Brazil, and which is typically a market that we would capture. And so we're pricing ourselves, every day we rally, we're pricing ourselves further out of the export market. And even if we get that kind of a crop loss here in the U.S., we're starting with a stocks to use ratio of old crop that's almost 50%. So we're not going to run out of wheat.
I agree with Dave again. I think the only sentiment I would add is that river stocks seem to be pretty low. So I think there's certainly some export demand component. But like Dave said, the higher we go, and Chicago tends to lean or follow Kansas City's direction, I think we've been encouraging growers to hedge. In fact, you know, about a month ago when we really surged into this, you know, low $6, $6.25 area, we were hedging not only July 26, but a little bit of July 27, simply because we're not going to run out of wheat, it feels like today.
It does take pressure off the corn market, though.
Yeah, definitely there's some spread activity there and supportive spillover support. But we've got two different crops, as Dave kind of hinted on. Here in the east, soft red winter wheat looks great. I mean, it's fantastic. It's right in the coattails of KC. Our guys out in Kansas say it's definitely short. It's definitely hurt. And so that's what the rodeo is all about. Technically here, that July KC wheat has a price target, maybe $7 to the upside here if we keep the momentum going.
What are the things you're talking mostly to producers who are kind of busy in the field at this point, but what are you talking to them about other than the things that we've covered at this time? What is it that you have them looking at? For instance, is it looking forward to 2027, price of anhydrous in the fall? Those sorts of things, diesel fuel, what kinds of things are you discussing with them?
Well, our conversation's actually been quite light, to be honest with you. What happened was basically on the marketing side is they got aggressive, sold a lot of beans off the combine last fall, wishing they wouldn't have done that. The market just continues to climb the wall of worry. So the main focus, of course, has just been on the floor strategy. That way they leave their upside open. Other than that, it's just a matter of what type of progress and keeping in touch on what type of conditions they have in their area.
Yeah, Todd, I mean, a number of different, factors there, but really tough for producers to identify any kind of, fall or even next spring value on fertilizer or even fuel just because of the way these markets are working. So not a lot to be done there. We are watching the bean basis, to Brian's point, when you have a $3 plus board crush, when you have D4 RINs trading at $1.90 a gallon, those crushers are going to continue to look for beans wherever they can find them and run those plants absolutely as hard as they can. The downside of that is they can't run it much harder than they already are, and additional demand is going to be tough to come by in that sense. I think for right now, as tough as this is for me to say, we're really sitting on our hands a little bit. If we're 40% marketed for new crop and we're down to our last, small chunk on old crop, I think I'm happy with where I'm at, and there's so many unknowns here. I'm going to give it a little bit of time and just see what unfolds here. But don't take that as, as bury your head in the sand. I think you have to be ready with offers. You have to realize where your profitability levels are. And taking risk off the table at a profitable level is something we are very interested in doing.
As an end user with the ethanol plant, I'm wondering how covered you think ethanol plants are. You should have a good idea on your own across the United States and what that portends going into the next month, month and a half.
I think coverage is fairly good in a general sense across the East Central Illinois, West Central Indiana area in the spot 30 days. The end user as a whole, even if you extend out to the Southeast customer, the livestock rail consumer, have been living hand to mouth because they just simply don't like paying some of these high basis levels. And they also know that the stocks numbers we've seen from the government have shown a higher percentage of corn and soybeans on farm year over year. So at some point that wave comes. So I think, again, to my earlier point when we first started the conversation today, growers are seeing that kind of surge in basis. So our conversations have simply been focused on remaining old crop bushels. If you can't, don't like the flat price, then I think you at least have to look at locking in basis, and then putting some offers against those to price those contracts. In many areas, not necessarily in the areas I cover, but the further east you go into eastern Indiana and western Ohio, where Ohio's crop was smaller last year, you're seeing really strong basis, 35, 40 over, where growers can get close to $5 cash on old crop. That's a sale, in my opinion, and we've been pushing guys in that general direction to do so.
And with you also, I'd like a better understanding of ethanol as you look at higher prices, the $4 plus per gallon, diesel fuel well into that $5 area. How long does it take before the consumer starts to cut back on driving? And does that have much of an impact? And then can it really be offset by year-round E15 that is in place at this point?
I think the E15 certainly helps. It's been a big component of the ag industry, the ethanol industry, to try and get it done year round because of what it may mean. Obviously, there's a lot of things that have to happen from the blender side at the pumps, but I think that's the easy, low hanging fruit for the next wave of corn demands. That's been the focus, and it certainly will help. To your point or question on the driving piece, we've not seen it change yet. I think at some stage people will have to cut back on travel, and we could see some demand. But the one thing that we've seen as an industry over the past 12 months has been the increasing export demand. And I think the higher prices go overseas from a fuel consumption standpoint, the more willingness they're going to be to look at potentially importing more ethanol into some of these countries to help offset some of their fuel costs.
So ethanol crush probably stays very high, I would think. Well, it'd be good news going into summer. But eventually there will be a kind of a wall of corn that still has to come in out of the bin, I would think.
Well, a lot of it's being moved. A lot of it's been cleaned up. There's always going to be some corn out there when you got a 2 billion bushel carryout. But this high fuel prices kind of woke up some of these other countries' alternative sources of fuel or energy. And Brian hinted on there, I think China might even be looking at some ethanol from the U.S.
Let's get a final comment now from each of you. I think Dave Chatterton, I'll start with you from Strategic Farm Marketing. Your final comment for the day.
Yeah, Todd, I think we did a good job of covering, you know, what's relevant today. And unfortunately, if we have this conversation in 2 weeks or a month from now, it could be a much different marketplace. But, you know, you have to deal with that proactively as a risk manager. And, you know, to Brian's point, whether it's floors, however you want to look at that, but don't fall asleep at the switch. I guess the other thing I'll say, we covered a lot of ground today. I think we did a good job. Just be safe out there, you know. Pricing and profitability don't mean anything without, you know, if you're going to get hurt. So just, it's a busy time of year. There's a lot going on. Everybody gets in a hurry. I've done it. We've all done it. So be careful.
Brian Stark from the Andersons.
Yeah, I think it's just reiterating my point that I made at the beginning. I think this is the time of the year where we can't fall asleep literally at the wheel. To Dave's point, safety is of the utmost importance, but at the same time, we have to stay connected to your advisors, to your grain merchants, to your brokers, to make sure you're paying attention to the cash markets right now, because they're going to strengthen and continue to strengthen until coverage is had through the month of May. And while you may not be able to execute on delivery at that time, I think it's important to look at seeing if there's opportunity to lock in some summer month delivery, because once you get there at some point, this wave of grain, as you mentioned earlier, Todd, is going to have to come to the market.
And Kurt Kimmel from AgMarket.net.
Giddy up. It's the year of the fire horse. Volatility is not going to go away. Geopolitical news is uncertain. Near term, tomorrow, May options are expiring, so most of the volume is around the May 450, so keep an eye on that. If you're looking for a full moon high, that's next Friday, Dave.
I was going to ask, Kurt. I'm glad you mentioned that.
That's Kurt Kimmel and Dave. Dave Chatterton joining us here on Commodity Week along with Brian Stark. You can always find the program anytime you'd like at willag.org, willag.org. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We do have an addendum to our program today. A special guest joined us, Wayne Nelson, who was with L&M Commodities for years and on WILL Tuesday afternoons.
Thank you, Wayne. What is your special message for the day?
Well, Todd, it's always a great time to come over and get together with all my old friends. You know, I've been retired a few years, but it's just so much fun to see and get along with everybody. But what I really wanted to say was congratulations, Todd. You know, last Monday night, we went to a big ceremony where we gave out a lot of very special awards to alumni of the University of Illinois. And one of the big recipients was Todd Gleason. And I was so proud to be sitting at his table and to be his friend and to see how and all the things that he had done over the years. And I just wanted all of you to know how impressed all of us are and how happy we are to see Todd finally being recognized. And I think, you know, with the passing of Orion Samuelson, Todd is the voice of agriculture for the Midwest.
Thank you. I'm so humbled, Wayne, and congratulations to you, and thank you, too, for nominating me. Wayne Nelson, of course, is also a College of Aces Award of Merit winner.